So between 10 and 10.30, we're going to be chatting to Professor Anthony Veal. He's an adjunct professor at the Business School at the University of Technology in Sydney. And it's all about whether or not we should be working shorter work weeks or shorter work hours during the day. He's got some insights into that. And then Dr. Zelda Barents, a lecturer in curriculum studies and program coordinator of the foundation phase in the Faculty of Education at the University of Stellenbosch. Now, there is also a very important job. We might even deviate and talk to Zelda about how to get young people ready for the future and how to get out of this mindset of, oh, the world owes me everything because I'm poor or because I'm white and my kids can't get in because of triple BEE. I'm sorry, I've just decided to draw a line today. I don't feel sorry for any of you unless you try and make your own reality and future through actually rolling up your sleeves and at least trying. Anyway, so that's happening between 10 and 10.30. Closer to 10.30, I'll tell you what's coming up before 11. So let's dig right into the show, shall we? Professor Anthony, or Tony Veal, adjunct professor in the Business School at the University of Technology, Sydney.
Play Cape Talk.
Join the conversation the smart way.
This is Cape Talk.
Eight minutes past 10. Now, over the past 2 years, we've been speaking to Andrew Barnes of Perpetual Guardian in New Zealand. He's the CEO there, where they've successfully implemented a four-day work week. The concept has been adopted by a number of other companies around the world, including Microsoft in Japan, with very positive results. That's something we paid homage to. I think it was mid-last year, towards the end of last year as well. But an academic in Sydney, Australia, has suggested that we should perhaps be doing things another way by reducing the time or the number of hours, at least, in a workday. Now, there's something that also sounds rather palatable. So joining you this morning, we've got Professor Tony Veal. He's an adjunct professor, Business School, University of Technology at Sydney. Can I call you Tony?
You may, yes.
Thank
Good morning.
You. Thank you so much. I'm not a very formal person, but I do respect people's titles, and so I always start off by asking. So,
no, we're all informal these days.
Before we speak, how's the fire doing there? How are you experiencing it?
Well, I've been fortunate. There have been some fires a few kilometres from me, but not the very worst of them. There are some days when the wind's been in the right direction. We've had some smoke. I'm north of Sydney, near the city of Newcastle, for anybody that knows Australia. So a little bit away from the worst of the fires to the west of Sydney. But the weather forecast is very good for the end of this week, where we're going to have several days of rain, which should clear the air and dampen everything down. So everybody's got their fingers crossed.
So while we're always on opposing sides on the rugby field and the cricket pitch, you know, when it comes to fires and the devastation that it can cause, it's something we've experienced. Our thoughts and our support, obviously, with you and your countrymen. But let's talk about this issue, hey? Shorter work days. Now, if I had to introduce you to Jack Ma, he'd probably say, no, I don't want Tony speaking to my staff. I think they should work harder. What exactly are you proposing?
Well, I would probably give him a copy of a couple of books, from Henry Ford of motor industry fame in the United States, who believed that he got better, more work out of his workers by reducing their working hours and increasing their pay, so that they had the money to buy his cars and the time to enjoy them. And the other book would be from Lord Leverhulme, who is the who founded the Lever Brothers Chemical Company,
yes,
which is still in existence, a very large company in Britain. And he wrote a book advocating the six-hour day, because he said the additional 2 or 4, even 4 hours in some industries at that time in the 1920s were wasted. And he did actually experiment with some reduction in hours, and of course they had child labour in those days, and he even built schools to enable the kids to learn to read and write rather than slaving away over machinery. So I would introduce Jack Ma to some pioneering industrialists of the past, and point out to him that the some of the most productive countries in the world, for instance, Germany and some of the Scandinavian countries, have the shortest working hours in the world.
And it's really about outcomes, right? You've got people who've got to do a particular job and they've got deadlines. How they get there is up to them within framework. Obviously, it's not the Wild West, but if you can enable them. By the way, for those who don't know, we have technology. Yesterday, I was supposed to have a business meeting, and I couldn't travel all the way to the deep south. And I said, hey, there's this thing called Skype. Let's actually have a chat. Yeah. It was probably one of the more relaxed chats we've had. So this is possible, right?
Well, that's right. Well, the whole history and in the paper the online paper I've written on this, I try and trace the history of this thing in Britain and Europe and North America. I guess the history's maybe a bit different in South Africa, but maybe not totally different in the urban areas. That is, back in the earlier 20th century, people were working 12 hours a day. And big campaigns were had. It was almost the basis of the formation of the union movement to reduce that to 10 hours and then to to 10 hours and then to 8 hours. And that took some decades for that to happen. And only then did they say, well, why are we working 6 hours? Let's have Saturday afternoons off. And that sort of created the sports industry almost. And then eventually Saturday morning. So it actually took place over a long period of time, and often against the resistance of industry. And during that time, the productivity and the output of the Western capitalist nations went forward by leaps and bounds, despite the fact they had two world wars and a Great Depression.
Well, there we go. Well, some would argue the world wars would have helped certain companies contribute to GDP.
Well, that got them out of the depression, of course, because of the boost to manufacturing for all the wrong reasons. But that's economics for you.
Absolutely. Now, so what's the magic number? Right? Business is so nuanced. Cultures are different. Australia, South Africa, even within countries, it's very nuanced. So where does one act?
Yes.
How does one get to the magic number? Is there a magic number of hours per day?
No, I don't think there is. I can't look forward very far at all. We might get to the magic number when probably you and I are no longer here.
Yeah.
Across the world, all economies are doing is trying to grow.
Yes.
And this is basically done by increasing productivity. And they increase productivity by investing in and innovating in new technologies and educating the workforce. And so that the average worker today in most countries is 10 times more productive than they were 60 or 70 years ago. And I assume if we don't blow ourselves up or get fried in the meantime, in another 50, 70 years, they may be 10 times more productive. Now, who knows what will happen to working hours? Mm. In the past, what happened, again, I'm talking of Europe here and obviously America, where the growing productivity, which came from investment in education and better work practice and so on, when it came up to the worker share of that, which had to be negotiated for and all the rest of it with the employers through the various processes, the worker share of that tended on average over the years to be split 20% to reduce working hours and 80% to increase wages. So that was the ratio, 4-1. Mm. And what seems to have happened in about the last 30 years, it's gone 100% to wages with not much movement on the working hours. So I can't see why there's a magic number at 8 hours a day and 40 hours a week where we should stop. I don't see why part of the increasing productivity over the next decade couldn't be traded in for some reduced working hours.
Well, maybe someone wants to...
What we've seen is that certain industries are experimenting with that already, the more progressive industries or industries that can afford to do it. But, of course, it always was like that. There were always industries like steelmaking or coal mining, which are highly unionized or were highly mechanized, which could do the... Or Henry Ford and his motor factories that could afford to pay the high wages and to reduce the working hours because they were innovative and they were productive. And then the other industries had to follow on afterwards because they had to compete for labor. So they had to pay and have the same conditions as the more advanced industries.
Yep.
And then later on, you would get things like minimum wage legislation coming in to sort of lift up people at the bottom so that people weren't left behind. So it's quite a complicated process, and these things don't happen overnight. And there's nobody waves a magic wand. That's the scenario.
Now, Tony, in closing, because I was asking about magic numbers, isn't our real downfall in business in general that we don't understand our people? Starting with the HR process, right? When you onboard people and you want to get them to work in your business, you now go, oh, you got a, oh, cum laude, hey, wonderful, you've got an honors, you got a master's, great. We don't find out whether people are idiots or not. We don't find out what makes people tick, what their key drivers are personally. We tend to have the keep the work, keep the home stuff at home, and you concentrate on work. Surely if we did better intelligence gathering about our staff, we'd be able to much more effectively craft a productive business by understanding key needs of individuals, aligning that with their work, and building flexibility within work, you know, through that understanding. Would you agree? Far-fetched.
Well, I agree with that. And I think the more successful employers and industries already do that sort of thing. And I, of course, they're high profile, the Microsofts and the Googles and all this world. But of course, we know about their campuses and their snooker tables and all the rest of it that they have. Well, what are they doing? They are thinking about the type of worker they have and what their needs are. And I would suggest that some of this 4-day week, 3-day weekend is catering to that demographic as well. Young people full of energy without family commitments and so on are only too happy to work very hard and in a concentrated fashion for 4 days, and then they have 3 days to work equally hard at their leisure time. Now, it seemed to me other groups in the community, for instance, couples with children, would say, well, no, the pressure comes on a day-to-day basis.
There we go.
It's not a weekly thing. It's a daily thing where we get stressed because we can't fit everything in because there's too much to do and not enough time to do it. And so you have the option of saying, well, should we have 4 days of high stress and 3 days to get over it, or can we have 5 days without any stress and a standard 2-day weekend? And it's probably horses for courses, as we say in Australia, and that is that, because one of the demands that the labor unions have been making, and it's even in the International Labor Organization sort of charter these days, is the idea of flexibility and the sovereign worker, if you like, who's sovereign over their time, that has more control over how they work and how they adjust work to their living pattern, their life goals, as it were. And progressive employers and successful employers understand that.
Well, I love it. Thank you so much for your insights. I wouldn't mind sitting in one of your lectures, Professor Tony Veal, adjunct professor in the Business School at the University of Technology in Sydney. Maybe you've got some thoughts on that. You've got some insights. You run a business. Maybe this just sounds like a bunch of waffle and you think to yourself, well, it's not that easy. What have you tried? That's the other thing. Get people to sit in the boardroom. Ah, you can't do it. Can't be done. Never been done before. Yes. I mean, say that to Elon Musk or anybody else who's built something that we've never had before. Anyway, it is 10:22.